Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, August 26, 2019. Coming up this hour.
The trade war headlines come fast and furious as President Trump announces an apparent de-escalation.
This is a very positive development for the world.
The president says trade talks with China are back on after the threat of deeper tariffs on Chinese goods.
U.S. futures gain, reversing earlier losses, reaching as deep as 1.6%.
President Trump gets agriculture relief in a deal with Japan. Plus, the president says he knew Iran's foreign minister was coming to the site of the G7 summit. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Yankees beat the Dodgers in L.A. Mets lost again to the Braves, and today is opening day at the U.S. Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are gaining on the latest U.S.-China trade news. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 24 points, Dow futures up 222, and NASDAQ futures up 90. The DAX in Germany is up 0.3%, the CAC in Paris up 0.6%, and there's no trading in the U.K. today. Nikkei 225 in Japan fell 2.2%, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down 1.9%. 10-year Treasury up 26 32nds, yield 1.44%, yield on the 2-year 1.45%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.7%, or 39 cents, at $54.56 a barrel. COMEX gold little change down 50 cents to $15.3720 an ounce. The euro 1.1114 against the dollar. The yen 105.88. Nathan.
Karen, the headlines on the U.S.-China trade war are coming fast and furious this morning. S&P futures fell as much as 1.6% overnight in response to Friday's news that President Trump is ramping up tariffs on Chinese goods. Now, futures are higher after the president's first remarks of the day from the G7 summit in France.
China called last night our top trade people and said, let's get back to the table. So we'll be getting back to the table. And I think they want to do something. They've been hurt very badly, but they understand this is the right thing to do. And I have great respect for it. This is a very positive development for the world.
The president says U.S. officials received two very productive calls from the Chinese, but declined to say whether he had spoken directly to President Xi Jinping.
China, in the meantime, is not confirming word of that phone call. We get more from Bloomberg's Enda Curran in Hong Kong.
The foreign ministry spokesman said that he wasn't aware of any weekend phone calls, so we'll have to wait for further clarity on that from the Chinese side. But earlier, we had some comments from the vice premier, which seemed to indicate an attempt to de-escalate tensions and a signal that China is willing to come to the table to try and talk through these issues.
U.S. futures and European shares had been plunging in reaction to Friday's ramped-up trade tensions, but are now pairing those declines.
And the softened tone comes after a weekend full of ramped-up rhetoric. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie reports from Beijing.
The state media here coming out and saying, look, we are now very seriously preparing for a further escalation in the trade tensions. You had Hu Xijin, the editor of the fairly influential Global Times newspaper here, saying that the U.S. was at risk now of losing China. And we also had the state media saying that China would fight this trade war until the end.
China's offshore yuan hit its weakest level ever overnight, but is now off those lows after the central bank set its daily fixing stronger than estimates. Right now, it's trading at 7.1590 per dollar.
And there are concerns that President Trump could force U.S. companies to leave China. On Friday, he urged firms to seek alternatives to business in the country. And over the weekend, White House Economic Director Larry Kudlow reinforced that directive.
He's asking American companies to take a look, take a fresh look at, frankly, moving out of China, going someplace else.
Kudlow spoke with Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation from CBS, heard right here on Bloomberg Radio.
So to be clear, the president does not believe he can block private transactions with China.
He is not intending to right now. That is not his intention.
But that is still something he's thinking about?
I don't even want to go down that road. It's like first things first. Let's look straight ahead.
Meanwhile, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says the president could force companies to leave China by using the International Emergency Economic Powers Act.
Now, that ramped-up rhetoric took a bite out of stocks in Asia today, where most markets closed before the news that trade talks could resume. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The apparent escalation in the trade dispute had instead weighed on investors' minds in Asia, with money going into the yen, gold and bonds. The yuan fell to an 11-year low, while the offshore currency was trading at its lowest level since its creation in August 2010, despite a stronger-than-expected daily fix from the PBOC. The stronger yen saw the Nikkei 225 close lower by 1.6%, while China's CSI 300 was down 1.4%. Hong Kong stocks had been under the most pressure as investors there were hit with the double whammy of the trade conflict and a 12th week of protests in the city. Volatility on the Hang Seng index spiked almost 30% intraday, the most since February 2018. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Stocks in Hong Kong finished the day down 1.9% despite getting a boost from news that trade talks are back on. Protests turned violent again in Hong Kong during the 12th straight weekend of demonstrations. The events began with a peaceful human chain across the city on Friday, but ended with police using water cannons on protesters. Bloomberg's Stephen Engel has more from Hong Kong.
Last night, quite violent again. Six police officers had to draw their sidearms. The senior police superintendent, Yolanda Yu, defending one officer's decision to actually fire a live round into the air because the officer's life was, quote, in great danger. Now, another 36 arrests on Sunday on top of more than two dozen arrests on Saturday. 15 officers, according to the Hong Kong police, were injured. Protesters had charged a fallen officer with metal pipes and other weapons, including bricks and also Molotov cocktails. Friday protests were peaceful. Saturday and Sunday, far from it.
In the latest warning from Beijing, a report from state-run Xinhua news agency suggests China is losing patience with the protests. Right now, S&P futures again higher, up 23 points now. Dow futures up 224, and NASDAQ futures up 86, or almost 1.2%. The DAX in Germany is up 0.25%. The 10-year Treasury up 26 32nds, yield 1.44%. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to get more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. There is more news out of the G7 summit in France. This morning, President Trump called a pact with Japan a massive deal, especially for our agriculture, our farmers, our ranchers, and e-commerce. Bloomberg's Isabel Reynolds in Tokyo reports on the latest agreement.
The U.S. and Japan agreed in principle on a trade deal under which Tokyo would slash tariffs on American farm products, while staving off for now the threat of punitive levies on Japanese auto exports to the U.S. President Donald Trump said Japan had also agreed to large-scale purchases of corn and wheat. The deal may be signed as soon as next month. The proposed agreement would probably bolster Trump's support as he heads into a re-election campaign, but its initial reception in Japan was mixed. In Tokyo, Isabel Reynolds, Bloomberg Daybreak.
A top Iranian official paid an unannounced visit to the G7 summit Sunday following an invitation from France. Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo has more from Biarritz.
As the G7 enters its final day, perhaps the highlight in a very busy weekend was a visit by Iran's foreign minister that caught many by surprise here. The French president insisting this was not part of the G7 agenda, but of course, Emmanuel Macron has been trying for weeks now to de-escalate tensions in the region. In Biarritz, Maria Tadeo, Bloomberg News.
An official says Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif met with French President Macron as well as diplomats from Germany and Britain. Zarif has been under U.S. sanctions. President Trump says he knew of Zarif's visit to Biarritz and supported Macron's decision to invite him. Former Illinois Representative Joe Walsh announced he'll challenge Donald Trump for the Republican nomination in 2020, saying the president is unfit and must be opposed. Walsh on ABC's This Week says Trump is a bully and a coward, and somebody has to call him out.
I helped create Trump. There's no doubt about that. The personal, ugly politics. I regret that, and I'm sorry for that.
The Trump campaign communications director, when asked what was their response to Walsh running, replied with one word, whatever. By the way, ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, the series was billed as a possible World Series preview. It went well for the Yankees, who were coming off getting swept in Oakland. They won 2 of 3 at Dodger Stadium, surprisingly lost Saturday to a rookie pitcher, but they beat Dodger ace Hyunjin Ryu Friday night. They beat Clayton Kershaw last night 5-1, 3 solo home runs. DJ LeMahieu leading off the game, Aaron Judge, who homered every game of the series, and rookie Mike Ford. Domingo Germán improved to 17-3, and Aaron Boone was asked about the weekend.
It's a confident group, period. You know, I don't think there's any question that, you know, guys were excited to come and play here against a great team and a great venue. And I thought the guys really performed and, you know, delivered kind of all weekend. And they love these environments. And it was good to see them all really go out and contribute in a big way.
Now off to Seattle. Yanks 9 games ahead of Tampa Bay and dead even with Houston in the race for home field in the playoffs. As for the Mets, after their sweep of the Indians, they got swept by the first place Braves. Atlanta won 2-1 on 2 Josh Donaldson solo home runs. Mets were shut out until the ninth inning. And that Mickey Callaway's team, 5-11 versus Atlanta.
We got to figure it out. You know, they're a great team, but we got to do better. You know, if we'd have taken at least one in that series, you leave this 6 games 4-2. Instead, we're 3-3. So we need to figure the Braves out. That's for sure.
Play them again to the last weekend of the season. Mets off tonight. Rory McIlroy won in Atlanta, won the FedEx Cup, won $15 million. Marquee match at the U.S. Open tonight, Serena Williams versus Maria Sharapova. Oddly enough, first time they've ever met at the Open. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you very much. Futures on Wall Street have been whipsawed this morning. Right now they are pointed higher, with S&P futures up 23 points, Dow futures up 225, NASDAQ futures up 84 points. The U.S. Treasury yield curve is back to inversion now, with the 10-year up 26/32, the yield 1.44%, the 2-year 1.45%. That's a spread of minus 1 basis point. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we speak with the head of U.S. rate strategy at BMO Capital Markets, Ian Lingen, to get a look at where we are in the U.S.-China trade war. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stock index futures are swinging higher as investors assess the latest developments in the U.S.-China trade war. Treasuries are advancing with the dollar. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 23 points. Dow futures up 221. NASDAQ futures up 81. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 26/32, yield 1.44%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.45%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.9% or 49 cents at $54.66 a barrel. COMEX gold that'll change at $15.3740 an ounce. The euro 1.1115 against the dollar. The yen at 105.85. And today we are watching for a report on durable goods orders at 8:30 Wall Street time. And we're watching shares of Tesla up 1.2%. Sources tell Bloomberg Tesla will raise vehicle prices in China this week, a reaction to the trade war. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Cameron. On day 3 of the G7 summit, President Trump says that China called, talked to trade people, and said, let's get back to the table. The president says restarting trade talks is good for all concerned. It comes as the U.S. and Japan agreed in principle on a trade deal that would slash Tokyo's tariffs on American beef, pork, and other agricultural products, while delaying for now the threat of additional levies on Japanese auto exports to the U.S. President Trump said that he knew that Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif was coming to the site of the G7 summit and supported French President Emmanuel Macron's decision to invite him. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets lost along with the Red Sox. The Orioles won along with the Nationals. The Giants beat the A's 5-4. And tennis today is opening day for the U.S. Open at Flushing Meadows. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. It is 519 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Want to bring in Ian Lingen, head of U.S. rate strategy at BMO Capital Markets. Obviously, a lot of developments in just the last couple of hours in the U.S.-China trade war. Ian, where do things stand from where you sit?
Well, from our perspective, we have seen the Fed come out and make a very valiant attempt to tell the markets that they're going to be willing and able to deliver a reasonable amount of accommodation, but not truly start a rate cut cycle as an offset to the trade war. That was really the beginning of Friday's story. But as you point out, over the weekend, a lot has changed. The biggest takeaway, regardless of some of the signs, some of the positive signs coming out of the process, is that things are getting worse, and it's going to be a very long time before we have the type of resolution that the market really needs to see to get back to business as usual, as it were.
That raises a couple of questions. Well, one is there much that the Fed can do, even with accommodative policy, to weather this trade dispute? And what indicators are you looking at in terms of greater clarity?
So, again, a very good point. That the biggest question in the market right now isn't whether or not the Fed will be willing to act. It's will they be willing to act enough? And even if they do, for example, instead of easing an aggregate of 75 basis points, instead ease 150 basis points and shift to a price-level targeting regime, is that even going to be enough? Is that enough to offset the damage that's being done on the fiscal side from the trade war? And to look at the market right now with 2- and 10-year yields both at effectively 145, the market is telling you no, there's really nothing that the Fed is going to be able to do, particularly given where we are in terms of the business cycle and the lack of inflation that's in the system. That's one of the key issues that is underlying this entire conversation, is that the Fed hasn't seen the type of inflation return in the U.S. economy that they would have expected to see, and they don't want to turn into Europe. They don't want to turn into Japan, and so they're going to be more aggressive in spurring inflation. In terms of what is it there, or what are the biggest indicators that we'll be looking at, obviously the performance of risk assets and its flow through to financial conditions has been very important in this cycle, and so we'll be seeing how the equity market takes the news. In addition, in terms of the real data, while a lot of it does tend to be a bit backward looking, the employment landscape is very important. What is the unemployment rate doing? How many jobs are being added? And is consumer confidence ultimately going to take a big enough hit that it flows through to a reduction in spending? Because that's really where every recession in the U.S. ultimately finds its true origin.
Is there a risk from becoming too accommodative for the Fed in a low inflation environment like this, even with the headwinds from the trade war?
I think that the biggest risk is that the Fed doesn't become accommodative enough, because if we think traditionally what happens when a Fed or a central bank is too easy, it tends to spur inflation to the point that inflation gets out of control. There doesn't seem to be any chance of that happening, at least not in the near or medium term for the U.S. So then the question becomes, if we find ourselves in a situation where core inflation does pick up, imagine a world in which core CPI is running above 2.3, 2.4 on a year-over-year basis sustainably, and the Fed doesn't return with a tighter monetary policy stance, that's the world in which we actually see a steeper curve, and we start to get this concern that the Fed might be losing control of inflation. But again, that's not a 2019, that's not a 2020 story. That will take a while to really start to flow through to the data.
We've got about a minute left here. With the yield curve back in inversion, where do you see yields going at this point?
At this point, the market is, to a very large extent, in a reactionary mode. It's a function, obviously, of the trade war, a lot of global uncertainties. We can't forget about the situation in Hong Kong. We can't forget about the tensions in the Middle East. But this is also very, very typical with the seasonal patterns that are at play in the Treasury market. The summertime is often very bullish for Treasuries. We tend not to see a reversal in the direction of the market until well into September or October. So I would actually expect a period of stabilization later in the year, but that does not preclude 10-year yields from setting new record lows sometime between now and the point in which the rally runs itself out. So call it, maybe we get back to 125 by the middle of September. I think that's very doable in the Treasury market at this point, but we will be in for a period of consolidation as the year comes to an end.
Ian Lingen, head of U.S. rate strategy at BMO Capital Markets. Again, thanks for being with us here, the start of what's looking to be a very busy week on Bloomberg Daybreak. And taking a look at the equity markets, they are pointing higher for now with S&P futures up 22 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's 5:25 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we will bring you the latest headlines in the U.S.-China trade dispute, plus a fuller check of the markets and all the latest in business, economics, and finance on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. The headlines on the U.S.-China trade war are coming fast and furious this morning. S&P futures fell as much as 1.6% overnight in response to Friday's news that President Trump is ramping up tariffs on Chinese goods. Now, U.S. futures are higher after the president's first remarks of the day from the G7 summit in France.
China called last night our top trade people and said, let's get back to the table. So we'll be getting back to the table, and I think they want to do something. They've been hurt very badly, but they understand this is the right thing to do, and I have great respect for it. I have great respect for it. This is a very positive development for the world.
The president says U.S. officials received two very productive calls from the Chinese, but declined to say whether he had spoken directly to President Xi Jinping. We get more from Bloomberg's Jody Schneider in Hong Kong.
President Trump has said the U.S. would accept the Chinese invitation and return to negotiations. That follows some calming words from the Chinese vice premier that he wants the two sides to resolve the dispute through talks, not through tariffs, that those are not the way to go. So lots of back and forth with the tariffs, but now it looks like today there's a little bit of standing back and saying, all right, let's try to talk.
Now we're still waiting for official word on talks from Beijing. So far, we've only heard from China's foreign ministry spokesman who said he's not aware of any phone calls between the U.S. in China.
Right now, S&P futures are up 0.7%, while Europe's Stoxx 600 is little change, down less than 0.1%. It was a tough day for stocks in Asia, with most markets closing before the news that trade talks may resume. Japan's Nikkei fell more than 2%, and China's CSI 300 closed down 1.5%.
And right now, Karen, we're going to head to Biarritz, France, where President Trump is holding a bilateral discussion with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Let's listen in.
Really great contributions from all of the different countries. I think that's true. Very
Mr.
good
President,
contributions.
There were news that you get you got a compromise on digital taxation between France and the U.S. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, we're getting close, and they want to make a deal. We'll see if we can make a deal. We're getting close.
Vor allen Dingen haben wir uns vorgenommen, dass wir im Rahmen der OECD bis 2020 alle miteinander eine Lösung finden, und das wäre ein Riesendurchbruch für die Fairness auf der Welt.
We have said that we have the intention within the OECD to find a solution for each and everyone by 2020, and that would be an enormous breakthrough to the benefit of everyone in Europe.
Correct.
And Chancellor Merkel, is Germany making a commitment to take back ISIS fighters in Syria?
Well, we're talking about that now, and we have a lot from Germany, which is a great thing, and we'll work something out. I think we're going to work something out.
Erstens haben wir bereits einige Familienangehörige aufgenommen, Kinder. Und zweitens werden wir uns auch mit den anderen europäischen Ländern koordinieren, wie wir hier mit den Vereinigten Staaten zusammenarbeiten. Das ist eine gemeinsame Verantwortung, das ist klar. Auch wenn es nicht ganz einfach ist.
I should say that we have already accepted a number of family members, among them primarily children. Secondly, we have committed ourselves, all of the European Union countries, to work together and to try and find a solution here, to work together with the United States on this one. But it's we want to find a solution together, but it is certainly not easy, I should say.
I think we've done a really great job. We defeated them. We took over 100%, not 99, not 98, because I was criticized. I said, all right, we get 98%, we're leaving. And I was very badly criticized. They say, why not 100%? So I said, all right, we'll stay, we'll do 100. So we did 100%, and we did a great job. And we've had very good talks, but, you know, it's not fair for the United States to have these people. We want to give them to the areas where they came from. And that includes not just Germany, France. We have a lot from France. We have a lot from UK. We have a lot from a lot of different countries, and for the most part, all in Europe.
Mr. President, China, sir, do you think it's possible that talks would advance and you could reach a deal to either delay or cancel the planned tariff increases that you've announced?
Well, I think anything's possible. I can say we're having very meaningful talks, much more meaningful than I would say at any time, frankly. And I think for the most part, it's because we are doing very well. China is a great country. I consider President Xi to be a great leader. I think you do also. And he is a great leader. And look, they're losing millions and millions of jobs. They're going to other countries. And if I were them, I'd want to make a deal. But in the meantime, the United States is taking in tremendous amounts of dollars, you know, billions and billions of dollars. And frankly, there's been no inflation, and most of these products haven't even gone up because China's able to manipulate and also able to put cash into the system where the product can stay at the same price. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a competitive product, and they wouldn't be able to sell it, and they'd lose jobs. But they've lost a lot of jobs, and I think they want to see a sensible solution. So there's a really good chance. I think we're probably in a much better position now than at any time during the negotiation. That's something meaningful. And I don't think you could have gotten here without having to go through this process. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think we're probably in a stronger position now to do a deal, a fair deal for everybody. And so we're having very meaningful talks.
Mr. President, Chinese officials haven't
Mr. President,
this.
Is the Chancellor pressuring you to de-escalate the trade war with China?
No, she'd like to see it worked out, because it's good for everybody, I think, if it works out. Not pressuring. She's a brilliant woman, and she understands exactly where everything is. She knows before most people, and she'd like to see it worked out.
Frau Merkel, was sagen Sie dazu?
Ja, natürlich. Wir merken doch, dass wir alle miteinander verbunden sind. Ich habe das schon oft gesagt, dass wir uns freuen würden, wenn es zu einem guten Abkommen zwischen.
It's German Chancellor Angela Merkel speaking alongside President Trump at the G7 summit in a bilateral meeting in Biarritz, France.
Okay. Mr. President, we're all somehow linked together. We all have every interest in trying to see this come to a solution, and we'd be very glad if an agreement could be found between China and the United States that is in our own vested interest.
Mr. President, when you are hosting G7 next year, who will be your surprise guest?
I don't think there'll be any surprises. I'm not looking for surprises. I think we'll have a very successful G7. It'll probably be in Miami, right next to the International Airport. Great location. It's one of the biggest airports. Takes planes from everywhere. You know, sometimes you have hours and hours of driving to get to certain locations. You'll only have a 5-minute drive, which is good. You land in Miami International Airport, and So we think we're going to have a very successful one, and we can learn from what took place here, because I think they did a really great job, even architecturally, the way the rooms were set up and designed. And I think they really did. We got some good ideas from this G7, but there won't be any surprises.
So are you going to invite Russia?
Well, we'll see. I think that Russia, we had a we had a talk, and no vote or anything, but we had a talk about Russia. My inclination is to say yes. Some people disagree with me, some people don't. There are people that agree with me 100%, but there are some that don't. So we did have a discussion about Russia. We'll see. I think it's advantageous, but other people don't necessarily agree. Maybe at this time, I think I could say, maybe at this time, without being specific. But we'll see what happens.
President, you expect to host the G7?
Yeah, seeming to set up the best. It's close to the, we haven't made a final decision, but it's right next to the airport, right there, meaning, you know, a few minutes away. It's a great place. It's got tremendous acreage, many hundreds of acres. So we can handle whatever happens. It's really, people are really liking it. Plus, it has buildings that have 50 to 70 units in them, so each delegation can have its own building. So you have the seven various delegations that could have their own building. So a lot of, and they could have buildings for the press. We have, it's very big, great conference facility. So we're thinking about it. They love the location of the hotel, and they also like the fact that it's right next to the airport for convenience. And it's Miami, Doral, Miami. So it's a great area.
Can you say something about Russia?
We haven't found anything that could even come close to competing it, really competing with it, especially when you look at the location being right next to the airport. Because so many places are so far away, the drive is so long, and, you know, you need helicopters, you need all sorts of things. This is something you can be there in literally a matter of minutes after you land. So I think they will appreciate that.
Chancellor, can you give us your views on Russia?
Yeah, this is German Chancellor Angela Merkel speaking alongside President Trump, giving her views on Russia, whether Russia should rejoin the G7 and make it a G8 in future gatherings of these global economic powers. This is Chancellor Merkel speaking alongside President Trump at the G7 summit in Biarritz, France.
We will certainly address these issues in our talks here. I want to see a talk held between and a sort of between the Ukrainian president, Mrs. Zelensky, the new Ukrainian president, and the Russian president. We wish to see progress made on the Minsk agreement. We've already made, as we saw, small progress with President Zelensky, and I think we have to try and bring this forward in the next few months to come. I, at any rate, have every interest in bringing about a solution to this. It is a big problem, and we have enough problems in the world as it is, so I think we ought to make...
He has to call him out.
I'd rather get back to the place, George, where I'm sitting down next to a Democrat member of Congress and we're arguing about capitalism and socialism. We're arguing about ideas. But instead, we're talking about a child in the White House who tweets ugly insults at average Americans every day. We're tired of that.
Walsh spoke on ABC's This Week, which can be heard every Sunday on Bloomberg Radio. As for the Trump campaign on Walsh's announcement, they put out a one-word statement, whatever. Forecasters say the fourth tropical storm of the Atlantic hurricane season is moving toward the Windward Islands. The U.S. National Hurricane Center says that Tropical Storm Dorian could intensify to near hurricane strength over the eastern Caribbean Sea by tomorrow. A tropical storm warning is in effect for Barbados, St. Lucia, St. Vincent, and the Grenadines. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost along with the Red Sox, the Orioles won along with the Nationals, the Giants beat the A's 5-4. In tennis, today is opening day for the U.S. Open at Flushing Meadows. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks very much. It is now 5:48 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And joining us now from Hong Kong, Bloomberg Chief Asia Economics Correspondent Enda Curran, as we continue to try to assess the latest developments, fast-moving in the U.S.-China trade war. Good to have you with us this morning. Obviously, you've been following all the developments from Biarritz along with the rest of us. What to make of this suddenly softened tone between the U.S. and China?
you know, it is quite fast moving and it is also quite confusing as well. It's hard to get a read on where things are headed. I just listened, in fact, to President Trump's press conference with Angela Merkel there just before I came over, and he was making the point that he thinks the trade talks are in a better place than they have been. By all accounts, that's a pretty positive signal to send. We had some commentary from the Chinese side today, in particular from the Vice Premier Liu He, which was to the effect that he seemed to want to calm things down a little bit, to de-escalate tensions, and he said that there's still a way for all of this to be talked through. But by all accounts, the signals coming from all sides are a little bit conflicting. Chinese state media is as hawkish as ever, and that's usually a reliable guide as to how Chinese policymakers are thinking. So it just feels like we've got a way to go on this yet.
Yeah, I was going to ask you the contrast between what we're hearing officially from the Chinese government and from sources like the Global Times, which has been seen as something of a media source that says a lot of things that the Chinese government can't say in public. Are we still seeing a disconnect there?
Yeah, on the one hand, we are getting the classic Diplo speak. For example, we had a foreign ministry briefing this afternoon. They didn't confirm that the telephone calls that President Trump referred to had indeed happened, but at the same time, they spoke in broad terms about the ability for both sides to negotiate on this. But as you say, when you look at the state media and the Global Times and others, that's where you see some pretty hawkish rhetoric. All the indications from that side of things are that China is well able to dig in for this one. They're ready for a protracted conflict when it comes to the trade dispute with the US, and there's no signs there of China pulling back its punches anytime soon.
And do you get that indication even further given where the Chinese currency is trading at this point? I mean, it's been allowed to weaken to its weakest level in 11 years this morning.
It did, but if you look at what they did on the fixing, which is where the government itself comes in to set the exchange rate level every day, so to speak, they set it a bit stronger than anticipated. And I think that's a sign from China that they are serious about keeping the yuan somewhat stable for now, at least. They don't want to set the hares racing on expectations that the currency will weaken markedly from here, because that, of course, brings other problems in itself, such as a broader financial market stability. If the trade war continues to deepen from here and there's no sign of a breakthrough, then that's where probably in the coming weeks, if not months, you'll see much more focus on China's currency and whether or not they start to allow it to weaken in response to any U.S. trade tariffs.
Is there anything other than rhetoric that has fundamentally changed between the U.S. and China? I ask this because President Trump this morning said that he had gotten a call and that talks were back on, or that China wanted to talk. But at the same time, hadn't talks still been scheduled next month between the U.S. and China in Washington?
That's right. They were originally meant to go ahead in September, but we have had a lot of water under the bridge since then. Most of these back and forward exchange of barbs, threats of tariffs and the rest of it. And there's no doubt that both economies seem to be feeling pain now. China's economy is certainly hurting in the manufacturing sector, and we are seeing some signs of softening in the US economy too, even if it is holding up somewhat okay. So I think observers following this process would say to you that both sides would probably still want to come to the table at some point to at least extend the truce, rather, even if they don't agree on an overwhelming trade agreement. That's why I think there's a lot of focus now on whether or not these talks do actually go ahead in September, and if that does put some kind of a durable agreement back on the table for at least to soften the blow of these tariffs or to put a pause on the rollout of any additional new tariffs.
It sounds like we could get a little bit more clarity on some of those fronts, perhaps as soon as next week when the first rounds of escalated tariffs go into effect.
Indeed, and we had the threatened retaliation from China, those announcements on Friday that triggered the response that it did from President Trump also. I think the indications are at the moment we're getting pretty close to that September 1 date, so most observers expect those tariffs to go ahead. Whether it would probably be something of a U-turn, I think, for those tariffs not to be implemented at this stage. Most economists are factoring them into their growth models. The critical question becomes, though, will be between now and the end of the year, will there be enough time for negotiations to reach the kind of a breakthrough where no additional tariffs are implemented And indeed, would there be any scope to roll back some of the tariffs that have been put in place, and that we head into 2020 with the trade war and something of a better place? Of course, if none of that happens, then we will be heading into the teeth of the US presidential cycle, presidential election, with no let up in sight for the China and US trade war.
Bloomberg Chief Asia Economics Correspondent Enda Curran with us from Hong Kong. Thanks for this, Enda. And just watching this headline cross the Bloomberg terminal from the editor of the Global Times, Hu Shijin, saying based on what he knows, Chinese and top U.S. negotiators did not hold phone talks in recent days. Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
The Justice Department has asked the U.S. Supreme Court for time to argue its position that sexual orientation bias at work shouldn't be prohibited under a federal civil rights law. The Department of Transportation wants to try keeping its draft environmental impact statements to no more than 150 pages. And the House Financial Services Committee will hold a hearing to review stock buybacks after lawmakers return from their summer recess in September. Buybacks have drawn criticism from the left in both Congress and the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now another legal story. Investment advisor Raymond Lucia beat the Securities and Exchange Commission at the Supreme Court in 2018. But in his latest battle with the agency, the SEC beat Lucia. For more on the story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Wayne State University law professor and former SEC attorney Peter Henning.
Peter, start by telling us about the Supreme Court's ruling last year.
Well, what the court ruled was that the SEC's administrative law judges had to be appointed by the full commission, that they were, under the Constitution, they were what's called an inferior officer. That doesn't mean they're not good, but they had to be appointed by someone who is the head of a department. And so the Supreme Court said, and in fact, the Trump administration had come into the Supreme Court and said, the way they were appointed was incorrect, that it has to be the full SEC that appoints them. So what the SEC did when the case was in front of the Supreme Court is they went back and essentially reappointed all six of the administrative law judges so that they had the proper appointment under the Constitution.
So at that point, the SEC could have dropped the case, but it chose not to. How egregious were Lucia's alleged misstatements?
Well, the SEC's point is, you know, it's a very evocative name, buckets of money. and that they said that there was a PowerPoint presentation that he would provide in these seminars that was misleading, that in fact, it did not really reflect how the investments were being operated. So the SEC went after him for a violation of Rule 10b-5, which is making a misstatement or omission to investors. And so the case then went to a different administrative law judge. It couldn't go in front of the one who'd originally heard the case, so they sent it to a different judge. And that judge is now going to be hearing the case, but Mr. Lucia had challenged that, trying to stop the SEC's administrative law process from going forward.
And that's Wayne State University law professor Peter Henning speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time, here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. S&P futures up 15 points, Dow futures up 158, and NASDAQ futures up 65. The 10-year Treasury up 26 30 seconds, yield 1.44%. Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.